Well, greetings once again to all of Greater TFMR. It is Thursday, and we know what Thursday is around here. It's time for A to A. Access to Access is our weekly webinar, and we use the GoToWebinar platform so that all of you listening get a chance to interact and ask questions directly of the guest. And this week, we've got a returning guest, a guy I'm very much looking forward to speaking with again. It's Mickey Fulp. Mickey has been a geologist and an analyst now for, I'm sorry to do this to you, Mickey, at least 35
years. Long time. Yep.
But you got started when you were six, and so it's okay. He's been at it for at least 35 years. He goes by, he has a moniker, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him and his work, very easy website to find, Gold Geologist, all one word, goldgeologist.com. He's got a free newsletter. All you got to do is put your email address in and you get updates from him, Mickey, on a weekly basis?
Yeah, we send out notice every Sunday of all the products and that I generate, and I'm a pretty busy guy. We average, 3 products a week, I guess, various kinds.
And it's good stuff. It's very necessary to have all the information you can get, obviously, if you're out there on your own, excited about the metals, excited about the miners. You know, everybody's always going to have a few duds in their portfolio, but if you can minimize the duds and maximize the good ones, man, you can really hit it out of the park with the leverage that they provide. And so I encourage everybody to check out Mickey's site, again, goldgeologist.com. Mickey, it's great to have you back. I wanted to just dive right in because it's such an, like I said, an interesting and exciting time. We saw that, you know, it was just a brutal 4 or 5 years where so many miners lost 70, 80, 90%. But then they came down and the indices and a lot of the shares seemed to bottom in late 2015. We had that huge rally the first 2/3 of last year and came down and put in a lower low on a lot of the indices. And now we're charging forward. So it's a little different look than where we were a year ago. And so my first question for you is, what do you think, I guess, as we go down the ladder from seniors to junior to exploration, what are the key metrics in evaluating a company, a mining share, now after what we've been through?
Well, it's all driven by commodity prices, of course. And we went through, as you say, about a 5-year downtick in the market. At least with regards to the exploration and mining companies, the commodities didn't really start to crash until arguably late 2012, but the mining companies, and especially exploration companies, their crash or their downtick started in Q1 of 2011 and exacerbated. You know, oftentimes when these markets get a little frothy, it's a black swan event, for lack of a better term, something unpredictable that just ticks them off and sends them on the downside. And for the exploration mining community, it was Fukushima. It affected uranium stocks first, and then it became an endemic situation. And so for a number of years, now we've been in a bear market. Evaluation of major miners, especially integrated mining companies, that's a really complicated scenario. And even the gold miners, which generally are one or two commodity company, occasionally they have significant silver or copper, et cetera, that's a little easier. But what we found, even during the bull market run of, say, arguably 2003 to 2012, let's say, and actually we did a study through 2014, and that's arguably the greatest bull market for gold we've ever seen. None of the gold miners were profitable during that period of very high prices, and the reason was they were focused on a growth scenario versus a value scenario. I'm a strong opinion mining is a value industry, not a growth industry. So what we found with the major gold miners was that they generated dividends by taking on debt and doing equity raises. So they weren't really profitable. With the downturn, it's forced them to become lean and mean. We'll see if they perform in the long term again. My real sweet spot is the junior sector, companies that really don't produce revenue. So they're very high risk, they're high reward. And we apply a very conservative valuation metrics to that based on tight share structure, experience, technical management with success in the past, and projects that have the merit or meritorious enough, let's say, that they could eventually become producing mines.
And when you look at them, some of these juniors, do you have, I mean, is there a common thread as to what, I guess, really trips your trigger? I mean, do you look at geology, or not geology, but geography, where they are specifically in the world, or do you like, do you want to always focus on quality management? What are your, some of your main points?
Well, yeah, once again, sorry to interrupt, but it's share structure, people, and projects. So it's a combination of all those. Going on to the geology end of it, or the project end, pardon me. We always want to make sure that they are on a located in an area that there is acceptable geopolitical risk. We want to make sure that they have access to infrastructure. Remoteness infrastructure can be a key metric. And a project with a commodity that I like, you know, I'm very much averse based on prior experience that has been largely successful with the so-called specialty metals, rare earths, graphite, et cetera. We tend to stay away from those unless you get in early, because those things are bubbles without supply-demand fundamentals that will support long-term high commodity price, et cetera. So there's a whole mess of stuff, and actually I have available for my subscribers an evaluation template that I use, and it's a 3 or 4 page Word document that goes through all the criteria that you need to look at before you make a decision to speculate. These are not investments, they're pure speculations in a very high risk, high reward environment.
And that's available just by signing up for the free newsletter?
Yeah, you sign up as a free subscriber on my website. Very easy to do. You go to mercenarygeologist.com. Just below my mugshot on the left is a hot button that says click here to become a free email subscriber. You give me a name. You can fake your name, but you can't fake your email address. And you'll get my products immediately. You get my stock picks are restricted to subscribers only, but you get every week you get a notice from me that gives you all the products I've done that week. And the real main benefit to being a subscriber is you get my stock picks as soon as they come out, hot off the press. And we've been very successful in picking stocks by applying a very conservative trading philosophy methodology to arguably the highest risk but highest reward venture capital market in the world, and that's the Toronto Venture Exchange.
Yeah. And again, obviously, that's great value, that list of what people should be looking for. Again, I encourage everybody to check it out and sign up for that free newsletter.
So let me reiterate here to explain this. So if you sign up for the newsletter, then you send me an email and I will send you access to the evaluation template.
Got it. Now, again, everybody listening, this is your opportunity to ask questions directly of Mickey. On your GoToWebinar control panel, there's a questions tab. You click it, a little dialog box opens, you type it in, it comes to me, and I pass it on to Mickey. But before we get there, and while the questions pile up, Mickey, I do want to ask you, you know, we're at this point now where prices are rising again, and there's some rumblings out there that maybe we should begin to expect some M&A activity, some mergers and acquisitions, in that some of these producing, these senior companies have kind of let the pipeline dry up, and they're going to be out there looking for new projects and acquiring new projects. Do you think, well, let's just, I mean, do you agree with that assessment? And if, how do you pick a company on that basis? I mean, what do you look for to say, yeah, this one here is a good potential buyout opportunity?
Well, I would say I'm equivocal on that take. One of the problems, say, since the last bull market run, which started in 2003, is there were the juniors versus doing what they're very good at, which is reconnaissance, grassroots exploration, discovering new deposits in underexplored terrains throughout the world. They didn't do that. They recycled old projects, many of which came through the majors, were shed-offs by the majors. So we've been saddled with a lack of new discoveries. I think most analysts in the business right now, let's just talk about gold because that's what really drives the Toronto Venture Exchange. There aren't very many good deposits that will track majors at this juncture. So the merger and acquisition activity by the majors, I don't look for that to really move the market. You'll see majors pick off occasionally projects that they think they can bump up in terms of number of ounces of gold to something that meets their criteria, and that's generally about 5 million ounces of gold. I think the merger and acquisition activity that we can expect, and we've been seeing this for well over a year now. Well, actually, probably since January of 2016, when gold prices bottomed. And the Toronto Venture Exchange bottomed. We've seen merger and acquisition activity more in the mid-tier gold sector. So we'll see a couple of mid-tiers or small-tier gold companies merge with the idea of building a mid-tier. And that's really where the growth occurs in this business, is people trying to make bigger gold mining companies, and we found that there's you can get too big. So that small to mid-tier sector, the small tier miners don't make enough gold to record generally to get ahead of their exploration development requirements, so they don't provide dividends. The mid-tiers try to do that. They have not been very successful either. The real sweet spot in this business in terms of actual business success over the last 10 years have been the royalty and streaming companies. And a lot of times the deals the mid-tiers do with the royalty and streaming companies to raise the necessary CapEx to get in production takes all their profitability away. So that's long story short, Craig. That's why I choose to go down the feed chain, the food chain, and look at the smaller exploration companies, because that's where you get those 5 and 10 baggers.
You bet. And that's where I mean, that's great value because, you know, as just a regular guy out there with a computer and you want to pick a few of those off because you think there's potential. I mean, you just simply don't have the expertise to be able to assess a good one versus a bad one. You're just basically gambling. And so that's where you know, what you can add is so valuable, Mickey. Before we get to some of the listener questions that are beginning to pile up, one last thing you'd mentioned offline before we got started, but how strongly you feel about platinum. And so I'll just leave that there and let you just kind of describe to everybody why it is that you're excited about platinum and are excited for its prospects.
Yeah, so we just completed a study, a 46-year history of platinum prices versus gold prices. So basically the platinum to gold ratio, since Nixon took us off the gold standard in 1971. And what we found is that a platinum to gold ratio of less than 0.85 in terms of price has only occurred about, I think it's 4.7% of the time. So 26 months out of 553 months in our study was the platinum price as low as it is right now. And today it's a little less than 0.83. There have been periods of time, and let me back up and say, of those 26 months, 16 of them are in a row starting in October of 2015, and that's ongoing, Craig.
Wow.
So we are in this ongoing platinum market that is historically very unusual. So you know, I'm a hoarder of precious metals, especially gold, but I also like platinum because it is the second most precious metal on the planet. Although it has significant industrial uses, it does function very well as a precious metal. So based on that, when I go out and pick off an ounce or two of a bar of gold or platinum or some silver, I look at those ratios to see which metal is undervalued with respect to the other. Platinum is arguably very undervalued with respect to gold historically, and so we would expect that to normalize at some point. So from that point of view, I like platinum right now. For probably at least the last year and a half, I have been buying platinum. When I decide to pick up an ounce or two, I'll buy platinum instead of gold. And I'm a cheapskate. I don't like playing markups or paying markups. So I buy bars instead of coins. But one thing you have to keep in mind too is the markup for platinum is going to be 2 to 3 times that of gold. I can find gold bars right now in the neighborhood store where I'm paying about something around 1%, 2% over spot price.
Yep.
Platinum right now, you're looking at somewhere 5 to 6% on a markup. So you got to take that into factor too.
Yeah, yeah. Are there I guess primary platinum miners that you like?
Yeah, and they're mainly in South Africa. South Africa, one of the most geopolitical risky places on the world, produces somewhere on a yearly basis 70-75% of the world's platinum. Second largest producer is Russia. Canada produces a nice amount. The U.S., Zimbabwe. So, you know, if you take Russia, South Africa and Zimbabwe, and you add all those together, you're probably looking at something well in the 85 to 90% of the world's platinum comes from those three countries that are either geopolitically risky, unstable, have unstable currencies, or not especially friendly to the United States. Despite Trump's desire to make Putin our friend, and I am fully on board with the idea that we need to get along with Russia.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. But are there specific shares that trade either in Toronto or the U.S. that are primarily or platinum miners, or at least that's
the company of the standalone U.S. listed company would be Stillwater Mining up in Montana, but it's not a particularly good platinum palladium mine, and it's very much skewed toward palladium, which is used almost exclusively now in gasoline burning catalytic converters for automobiles. So I think you're asking me, are there companies that are attracted to me in platinum palladium space, because the metals all go together? I'd say absolutely not. The world's best undeveloped platinum palladium deposit is in South Africa. It's owned by Ivanhoe Mines, a Robert Friedland-led company, and is arguably the best. I mean, the widths are, it's bulk mineable. The widths are tremendous. The grades are tremendous. But I am unwilling to take the risk of South Africa on.
Gotcha. Well, that's an excellent segue to the first listener question that I've got, Mickey. It comes from Cohen, who just wants to know what countries and jurisdictions that you like best. And then on top of that, are there any new jurisdictions like Iran or Georgia or India that interest you?
Yeah, well, those three countries that you mentioned, I would not put my money into any of those at this stage. Iran is one of the most geologically endowed countries in the world, but a Trump-led presidency would, as we've seen, is we're not going to be Iran's buddies. So, right. You know, I mean, Iran is always on my list of countries to follow, but the timing has to be right. You know, I've tried to make forays into Iran in the mid-2000s, and the timing wasn't right. I don't think it's right now. Go back to the beginning of that question. What countries do I like? I like the good old U.S. of A. We've seen the juniors go very far abroad and get burned by resource nationalism, geopolitical risk, corruption, bribery, et cetera, et cetera. And what we found over, say, the last couple of years is people are coming back to the good U.S. of A. And let's make America great again. makes a lot of sense to me. You know, we have very well endowed country. We're one of the largest copper producers in the world. One of the largest gold producers. Our oil business is second to none in terms of the number of barrels we produce per day when you add in natural gas liquids and condensate, which come mainly from gas wells. But so the U.S. is a sweet spot for me. Mexico's good country. Canada, I think less so because of First Nations issues up here now. And permitting difficulties, but certainly with a Trump administration and rollback in regulations and a friendly executive administrations toward development and the infrastructure build out, I think the opportunities in the U.S. are compelling at this stage, even for commodities that still haven't really made the comeback, and I'm speaking specifically of copper, which has only been up about 20% during this run, say, compared to zinc, which is up 60%, and also uranium, which bottomed in December at $18, a 12-year low. It closed yesterday well over $26, so that's quite a comeback, but that said, we still need about a $40 uranium price before projects anywhere in the world, for the most part, are going to make money.
Fair enough. Excuse me. Next question from Mike is along the lines of those base metals he talked about, copper and some of the others, zinc. Do you analyze those companies? I mean, things like Freeport-McMoRan is a big one. Do you analyze them, and do they have a different set of criteria that you use when you look at a base metal company?
Oh no, the criteria are the same. Certainly, I am of the opinion for a long term hold that Freeport-McMoRan is the best copper company in the world. They also produce significant amounts of gold. So that's they've had some difficulties over the past couple of years, but that company is, if I was going to invest, and I will call that an investment because they do declare a dividend. In a major integrated mining company focused on copper, for me it'd be Freeport-McMoRan. But once again, my sweet spot is the junior, so I'm looking for good copper plays right now. I think copper and uranium, I predicted a couple of weeks ago at an investment conference. Those are the commodities that should have the best return this year. They've started to come back, but they've got a long way to go. I mean, copper right now is $2.64 on my KCAS screen, updated to the minute spot price. And, you know, that's $2 off its all-time high of something about $4.44 in, what, 2012, 2013. So it's got a long ways to go, and as does uranium. So I'm looking for good junior deals in copper space, and in these incipient bull markets, I tend to go into new companies, startup companies that I can get in early and cheaply.
Sure. Yeah, you bet. All right. Next question has to do with, you know, someone that's just kind of starting out and having an interest in speculating in some of these miners. What is the best book, maybe best website, expert that you might recommend for mining exploration information?
Yeah, so there's a couple of books that are, and I'm going to come at it from the geology end because I think you need a basic understanding of what makes a mineral deposit and what makes that mineral deposit an ore deposit, with ore being defined as any commodity that you can extract from the ground and actually make a profit on. That's ore. So there are two books that I would recommend. One is by a guy named Rob Stevens, and he's a professor at BCIT, British Columbia Institute of Technology, here in Vancouver, and it's called Exploration and Mining Essentials, I think is the name of it, something like that. Just Google Rob Stevens and exploration and mining, and that'll pop up. And the other book is one called Mining Explained, and it's published by the Northern Miner out of Toronto. So those two books are a good place to start.
All right. Next question after you comes from KD, who says, years ago, company called, I'll see if I can pronounce this right, Aurelian Resources. Does that sound right?
Yep, Aurelian, yep.
They made a discovery in Ecuador that was so big, Kinross bought it out, and then they buried the project. Was that karma, or will it be revived one day?
Well, it has been revived, and it was not karma. It was a geopolitical situation, resource nationalism. So Aurelian got taken out at essentially pre-stock split at $32 off its all-time high of 40. Now, it had done a stock split, so 4-to-1, so it got taken out at $8 and some odd cents, $8.25, $8.50, something like that, by Kinross. A windfall for their shareholders, Dan, and this takeout occurred a couple of months, or was announced a couple of months before the socialistic Correa government, and bear in mind he is a devotee of Evo Morales in Bolivia, the Cocalero, who runs Bolivia. But the Correa government put a moratorium on exploration and mining and even staking of mining claims while they revised the mining law. Kinross took it over. The Correa government basically tried to nationalize that deposit, arguably the best discovery of the last 10, 15 years in this business. They reached an impasse. They sold it to Lundin Mining, led by the Lucas Lundin, son of Adolf Lundin, Swiss mining financier. And that happened, I think, a couple of years ago. I may have my timing off on that. But recently, or certainly within the last year, Lundin Mining has negotiated a what I consider very onerous deal with Ecuadorian government, essentially giving them 40% of the profits of the mine when it is built. I don't know if it can be built and produce economically for Lundin Mine, given the terms of this deal.
Yeah.
But arguably a very good deposit. It's it may have mining problems. There's rumors that influx of water could be a problem. I don't know about the metallurgy at this stage, but in terms of looking at the deposit, the size and the grade, its compactness, if you will, it looks like it is potentially one of the best mines in the world. But I think the deal is onerous, and I don't know where it's going to go from there.
Yeah, tough to make it work when you're giving away almost half the profits. But again, you got to do what you got to do to get it working, and then maybe try to unload it on somebody else.
Well, I don't know. You know, it's mining's tough business. That's why I tend to focus on the exploration companies and stay away from the miners.
Yeah.
I'm a geologist, not a mine engineer.
All right, I've got a couple of specific company questions in the queue, and then we'll probably begin to wrap up, I guess. One has to do with uranium miners, specifically Mawson Resources. Do they have any uranium assets that can be turned into a real asset, and is something called Areva still working with them?
Well, I cover Mawson Resources, so they pay to sponsor my website, and I am a dedicated shareholder. I have averaged down on my cost basis over, say, the last 6 months or so in that particular company. They are no longer associated with Areva. They sold all their uranium prospects in Scandinavia and spun those out to another company, which was partnered with Areva probably something around 4 years ago. They did a deal with Areva in northern Finland on a gold, uranium, a grassroots reconnaissance discovery. They ran into difficulties with environmental permitting and opposition by radical eco-fascist NGOs, for lack of a better term, and that has now been resolved. It took going to the Supreme Administrative Court of Finland, but they have all their drill permits now. They're drilling as we speak. I am very bullish on the prospects for Mawson Resources. In fact, I'm very bullish on northern Finland as a destination for gold companies, unexplored terrain that's very similar geologically to the Abitibi Greenstone Belt of Quebec and Ontario, which is one of the world's premier gold districts, certainly in the top two or three or four.
It's got to be colder than hell up there, Mickey.
Yeah, well, that's they're drilling right now, and actually this time of year, sun's starting to shine plenty of time.
Sun's coming back up.
But it, you know, it's a bunch of muskeg and mires and occasional little glacially carved out hills. So a lot of it in the summertime is basically inaccessible because it's in swamps and marshes, bogs and mires and fens and every other word you can describe that terrain. It's northern boreal forest. It's barely above the Arctic Circle. Nearest town is Rovaniemi, and Santa Claus Land, everybody knows, has heard about Santa Claus Land, is right up there. But the thing about that part of the world is, even though it's above the Arctic Circle, there are farms. They raise cattle up there. Now, they have to barn their cattle in the wintertime.
Yeah.
And there is a series of highways and logging roads. So it's not like the – and that's really because of the Gulf Stream, which brings warm waters into the Baltic Sea. and the Gulf of Finland, and so it's a much different climate. Very cold in the winter, yeah, but it's much different than the Arctic Circle that we're used to. It's
at least taiga
boreal forest sort of stuff.
Gotcha. All right, and just a couple of other individual questions. One about Serengeti Resources. You know anything about that one?
Yeah, I know Serengeti Resources. I know the CEO quite well on that. They've got, and I'm trying to remember the name of the project. It's starts with a K, KW something. It's in central BC. It's a copper gold porphyry that they've been working on for a number of years. The problem I see with that particular company and in BC projects in general is these porphyries tend to be very low grade up here, and so as copper prices go up, they produce and will make money, but when copper prices are low, they struggle. So I'm not really a fan of BC porphyry copper gold deposits.
All right. How about, I think this company used to be called Brazil Resources, and now it's called Gold Mining Incorporated.
It is, and somebody, whoever the people are submitting these companies, they must be, some of them must be followers of what I do. Gold Mining Inc., ex-Brazil Resources Inc., is a company that I am closely associated with. I've covered off and on for since it essentially went public back in, when would that be? I think in mid 2011. I was a pre-IPO private placement shareholder of that company. I still own a shares of that company. I cover them on occasion. That company went from 38 cents in December of 2015 at $3.35. What's that, a nine bagger?
Yeah,
almost. This summer, it's since backed off to it's trading around $2. And it can be very volatile. It can go on these big runs. I think it's probably had its run for a while now, but they got a lot of money in the till. They are on the acquisition trail. And I think that, you know, that if you can pick it off during times of weakness, it can be it can reward shareholders again. So as an example, it went from on December 20th of this year, of 2016, so less than 2 months ago, that stock was $1.52. On January 4th, 3rd or 4th, maybe the 5th, it hit $2.40. Yeah. So this is one of those things, and we did a piece on the seasonality of Toronto Venture Exchange, with this idea that you can pick up stocks that are sold off during tax loss selling that are good, strong, fundamentally strong stocks, and pick them up somewhere December 15th plus or minus 2 to 3 trading days when tax loss selling hits its peak and its bottom, and sell them the first week of January and make really good money. The Toronto Venture Exchange Index returns something between 10 and 12% over that 10-day trading period, if it's even 10 days, maybe a little less this year. So Brazil Resources, now called Gold Mining Inc., with a website, goldmining.com. Although they aren't a gold miner, it's a very good symbol, G-O-L-D, and a very good choice for a website, goldmining.com. That's a good example of the returns of what of by doing these quick-term trades, short-term trades.
Yeah, yeah. Mickey, you're being very generous with your time. Do you mind if I hit you with just a couple more?
I knew you were going to do this, Greg, so fire away.
All right. Levon Resources?
I do not know. I have not.
Mexico.
The only Levon I knew was Levon Helm, who was the drummer and one of the lead singers for the band.
There you go. Levon wears his war wound like a crown, calls his son Jesus, right?
That's there you go.
Done. all right. What price of copper would make BC Projects copper feasible? Not sure what that means, but British.
Well, yeah. So profitable again. I would dare say it's well north of $3. One BC porphyry company that I own is Taseko Mines, and they did a smart thing about a year and a half ago when they saw the copper price starting to go south. They locked in, they hedged a bunch of their production between $2.90 and $3. So I think for the most part, you're going to need those sorts of prices. You know, when copper price gets up back up $4, and I'm convinced it will, not going to give you a time frame on that. I don't think that will happen this year. But, you know, they're kind of the swing, what we would call the swing, as copper demand goes up and down and copper prices go up and down. BC porphyries ramp up and shut down. Maybe not completely shut down, but cut production, ramp up, depending on the copper price.
All right.
They certainly aren't in the first overall in the first quartile of copper producers worldwide, and that's if I'm looking at a deposit. That's one of my criteria. You want to be in the lowest quartile of total cost, because that allows you to survive the bear market cycles and commodities.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, and the last question I have in queue, we're going to circle back around to Cohen, make it all make sense in a whole circle. Cohen has a two-pronged question for you. Do you know anything about Silver Bull Resources, and what do you think of cobalt?
I do not know. I know I've heard the name Silver Bull, but in my memory banks, I can't come up with anything worth saying to the listeners on Silver Bull. Cobalt, it's a specialty metal. I do not like the overall supply-demand fundamentals. Most of the world's cobalt comes either as a byproduct of nickel, copper, PGM smelters worldwide, so that's controlled by four or five of the largest integrated mining companies in the world. And the other significant source is conflict minerals of the DRC, Democratic Republic of the Congo. And, you know, when a country's called a Democratic People's Republic of this and that, so that's a good sign you want to stay away from it. So there are real fundamental problems with cobalt. It's the latest bubble on the streets of Vancouver and Toronto, driven by this idea of lithium-ion batteries, which actually take more graphite and more cobalt than they do lithium. Personally, I am staying away from cobalt space. I inherited a couple of companies I have money in, either through spin-outs of other companies or a change in commodities. I inherited a couple of cobalt juniors trying to promote. I would say especially beware of areas like Cobalt, Ontario, and the whole boom going on around that old mining district. Because I don't think the long-term fundamentals of the cobalt market support the speculation that's going on now. Now, that said, if you get in early and can ride the wave up, the exponential wave in one of these stocks before they go down the backside, a parabolic fall, then becomes a matter of timing. But
fair enough. Well, all right, my friend. Hey, that brings us to the end, and I very much appreciate your time. But you know, before you go, we got to do the final four, just four fun, quick questions before we wrap up. So if you're ready, can I lay them on you?
Yeah.
All right.
Go ahead.
Number one, what is a better gift for Valentine's Day, chocolate or flowers?
It depends on what your significant other is most amenable to. So in my case, my girlfriend, I would certainly buy her chocolate.
Chocolate, yeah. You can share in that too. That's the upside of that deal.
Absolutely.
All right. You've got degrees from both the University of Tulsa and the University of New Mexico. So do you consider yourself first a Golden Hurricane or a Lobo?
A Lobo, no doubt. Although, mainly because their basketball team historically has been much better than the University of Tulsa. But, I've lived two-thirds of my life south of Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I am a donating member of the UNM Lobo Club,
Nice.
and I got some really good seats behind the visitor's bench in the infamous pit.
In the pit itself. I like it. All right.
Yeah, so anytime you want to come down for a game, let me know, Craig. I got two tickets, so.
Oh, that's a tough one to pass up. I'm gonna remember that, Mickey, no doubt about it.
Well, I'm serious about that too, so.
Believe me, I'll take you up on it at some point. A lot of people forget one of the greatest games of all time, that NC State Houston national championship.
Yeah, I didn't go to that. I had an opportunity as a season ticket holder to buy tickets, and I passed on it. And I wish I would have chosen those tickets.
I bet you do. All right, number three. When it comes up on your screen, you got to go out and see a mine, whatever. What's your favorite country to visit where you're like, oh, good, I get to go to where?
Well, I like going to all countries. I'm a bit of an adventurous guy and explorer, so I particularly like going to countries I've never gone to before. But that said, I spent a lot of time in Peru, and I really like Peru. Let me say this: I have a love-hate relationship with Peru. I love it 90% of the time, and I intensely hate it 10% of the time. But for geology and culture and food and it's just the most stupendous terrain that I've ever been in. You can go from the dry desert and big waves coming in on the Pacific Ocean and the clouds of the hanging over the coast with the Humboldt Current, and then and 50 kilometers, you can be at 4,000 plus meters near the top of the Andes. So that's hard to beat.
I bet. Yeah, that sounds fantastic. All right, and lastly, have you seen this BRIEX movie called Gold? And if not, what was the last movie that you actually saw in a theater?
I have not seen the BRIEX take off. I read reviews of it and the story, and to me, the real story is much more compelling than the movie ever could be. The movie is not true to the actual story. It's kind of a takeoff. And the last movie I think that I actually went to a theater. I went to my with my girlfriend, and we went to see the animated cartoon about Paddington the Bear. She's English, and so she was raised with those cartoons. But that said, we watch a lot of movies through the internet, and I'm a film noir guy, so give me a black and white from the late 40s to the mid 50s, and that's kind of my sweet spot for movies.
Mickey, I'm just sitting here laughing at myself. I could have sat here until 2019 guessing what was the last movie you saw in a theater, and I would not have come up with the Paddington Bear movie.
Yeah, so that kind of dates me. I think that was about a year and a half ago,
That
so
would not have
well
been,
over.
I would not have thought of that one. That's fantastic. Well, again, hey, thank you. I mean, Mickey, great stuff. And I just so much appreciate you giving us all this time and so willingly answering all these questions. Tell everybody again where they can find your work.
MercenaryGeologist.com is the website. At MercenaryGeo, we have over 60,000 Twitter followers, at MercenaryGeo. And this interview will be posted on our rotation on mercenarygeologist.fm, 24/7 streaming radio station on the internet.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Again, gosh, if you're out there, you know there's opportunity and you're trying to do this yourself. I mean, take Mickey up on this. This is about just about the best deal you're going to find. Someone with this level of experience and wisdom willing to share that stuff just for your email address. So take him up on it. Mickey, thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it. And I hope we can do this again soon.
Well, thanks a lot. I always enjoy speaking with you, Craig. And once again, thanks for the opportunity.
You got it, my friend. And to everyone out there, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.